Clock says it's 2:08. We have no guests to introduce. Are there any modifications to the agenda?
Yes. The first modification is the approval of April Salter to participate by telephone, as required by the bylaws. The committee must vote to allow her to participate.
Let the record reflect that April Salters is on the telephone, is available. Is there a motion to allow her to participate?
Moved.
Is there a second?
A second.
Any further discussion? Those in favor signify aye. Motion by like sign, it carries.
April, you can't vote on that.
Okay. I approve my own participation.
Yes. Okay.
The additional modifications, I'd like to poll item 14, which was the Collins Building renovation RFQ. We still aren't quite where we need to be with the prospective tenant, but I'll provide a further report when we get to that item and talk about the status of all of that. It's not all bad, it's just time. And then also to consider lease rates that the board might approve for lab space as a result of some of these changes that are going on. So again, I can address that when we get to item 14.
Dave, I had one thing I just had a question about. There's nothing on here about the status of the incubator, which I have a hard time keeping up with. Is that in your report?
That'll be in my report.
Okay.
And I'm glad you asked that question because I'm interested in hearing that too.
Michael and Denise are currently running a new program, which I will also tell you about, and just having to schedule exactly the same time as this meeting. That's why they're not here to provide that report. He will provide a full report at the board meeting.
Okay.
As far as where we're at, and I'll talk about the programs that he's got in place and kind of where we're at with all that.
These are your boys. Oh, yes. It's very sweet picture, Ron.
They're not that sweet anymore.
April, we've got a picture of his boys when they were very young on the screen.
Yeah.
It's really
nice.
Sweet.
That was like, I think, 2 and 4 or 5.
Ron, while we had that subject up for discussion a little bit, are you satisfied with the progress being made in that direction and where we are today and where we're going?
Yeah, and again, a lot of what you see on, or some of what you see on here is necessary for us to continue to move along, which is item 13, which is the formation of the 501c3. And I'll talk more about that when we get there, but there's some challenges with that. We're making progress with the EDA. He's provided information to the EDA that our representative requested, which basically gets us on their radar. So we provided that information, including the business plan and feasibility study and all of that. So, but Michael can talk more about that in detail at the board meeting.
Okay.
But yeah, I think we're doing all the steps that we have to. At the same time, and I can, while we're on it, I'll just go ahead and tell you, he's quickly developing some programs that will help us build the pipeline that will be needed to fill the incubator. Because that's a huge concern, obviously, is do we have enough companies at the right stage to be able to, to incubate them. So what he's done is he's created two programs. One is an education program for SBIR, SDTR grants, and that's what he's doing today. He worked on this program with FSU. They have 12 plus people in this first session.
That's awesome.
And we're saying they advertised it for like just a couple of days. I mean, it wasn't extensive marketing or anything. This is just working with the Office of Commercialization at FSU. Just got it done right away. So they're over at CAPS seminar room right now doing that.
At what seminar?
CAPS, where we've had some meetings over there for topics.
Yep.
And so that's the first session. And then the second, they're working on the next session with FAMU to do some stuff for them. But there is an item that we have on number 12, which is some funding that we had originally intended on using for EEP, but when we got into the details of it, trying to meet the requirements for the grant, we decided this development of the SBIR, SCTR program, along with some mentoring, was a better fit. And that's the $45,000, $15,000 a year for 3 years, that grant. So it's sort of semantics on how you get it. We're going to do it anyway, and we're working on some other alternatives related to EEP. Davey met with Hancock Bank. They have an interest, and Michael's going to be meeting with them again at the end of the month.
So just to clarify, I'm sorry.
I know we're kind of jumping around here. But.
Yeah, so I just want to see if I can get this in my brain. I saw number 12.
Okay.
So that has to do with FAMU doing this multiple acronym program. Was the first thing that
FAMU
you
FAMU is not doing it. Okay, so FAMU got a big grant to do something that they call REACH, which is it's basically trying to build the ecosystem for technology commercialization, and they have funds to distribute to other organizations. They specifically named us in their grant application to help further develop that ecosystem in Tallahassee. So that's where that money's coming from. They're not doing the program, we're doing the program, but we're working with them, and we're working with FSU, and it's not limited to those folks. You can get private sector folks involved. SBIR is for Small Business Innovation Research.
Yeah, I actually do remember that, but what we say that is, this program. Are there two programs you're talking about, or just this one?
This is the first one that he's working on.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, and then the other is the Hancock Bank thing.
No, that's.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I was talking about how we had originally thought the grant, this grant funding that we're going to use for this SBIR CTR, was originally intended to go to EEP.
Okay.
You redirected
that money. Okay.
It's going to this.
All right.
In its place for EEP, we're working with Hancock Bank to try to get some funding under that.
And hopefully do that under their CRA initiatives. They're required, as probably both of you know, to spend so much money in the neighborhoods in which they create deposits.
Right.
And to demonstrate that that's a benefit to the community.
The second program he's working on is it's an I-Corps program by National Science Foundation, and what it is, this is a pre-qualification training program. So the I-Corps program itself, if you get admitted into the program for training, you get $50,000. Okay, and the training is about the lean launchpad model and the it's left my brain. But
that's anyway, okay.
it's more about teaching Lean Launchpad.
What's I-Corps?
I-Corps is the program.
What is that?
That's just the name of the program. It's called. I don't know if it stands for anything.
Just trying to learn all this stuff.
Anyway, it's a training program, and it's for early stage companies that need to learn about their business model and also go do customer validation for their new business. So what we're doing is in collaboration with FAMU, who connected us to the what's called the Southern Node, I think Southern or Southeast Node of I-Corps. There's like six or seven around the country. This one happens to be with Alabama, University of Alabama. They will provide the trainers. There are two classes that they will teach at the beginning, in June 4th and 5th. And then there'll be, I think, three virtual courses where they'll actually get online, the participants will. And then there's a follow-up at the end, live and on-site. But again, they provide all the training. I think the only thing we're going to provide is the space to hold it and some food. So minimal expense to do that. But again, what we're doing is we're working with these researchers and engineers to train them so that they can eventually get more training and more funding to develop companies based on the technology that they're developing. This is filling the pipeline, basically. That's what we're looking at doing. Michael quickly identified that the SBIR CTR gap in the community was a big opportunity to fill. And so that's what he's really
doing. And with some dollars to it, wouldn't it?
Yes. So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, he was very careful and good when he responded to the One Tech Grant pitch. They had budgeted money for training, and in STTR, whatever, in that area. And I don't have those acronyms flowing off the tip of my tongue as fast as you do now, which is good. But he gently said, "Well, this is interesting. You've got 4,000 of our money to pay for this when I'm about to do this training." it was just a nice little tie in there to show that one of our tech grant finalists needed that. And it would have otherwise cost them. Is that fair?
Yeah. So we have, on the I-Corps program, they have signed up nine companies, or nine teams. You have two from the local community, entrepreneurs from the local community, two from FAMU, four from FSU, and one from DOT.
Wow.
I don't know the specifics of what they're all doing. This has all happened so fast. We just can't believe we just put it out there and boom, we got all these applicants.
Team would consist of about how many people?
I think it's two or three. Typically three. Usually in the actual I-Corps teams, my understanding is they put together, I think, like a principal investigator, usually a grad student, and then some business person. So again, because that's the kind of team you're going to need to put together to build a company out of it.
And just catching up with myself, because I'm pretty sure I'm on the right track, but this is the NSF training program. So it actually stands for I is Innovation. It's Innovation Corporations, basically. So that's where I-Corps comes from.
Okay, got it.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And the other big part of this is that it is a pre-qualification program. So in order to get any grant funding on NSF for this type of thing, you have to go through this program. So the next step, once they go through this program, then they can apply to get into the full-blown program at Georgia Tech, which is, I believe, a 6 or 7 week program, and it's more intense.
So this is a precursor to any NSF funding?
That's my understanding, yeah.
Wow.
I don't know the breadth of all of the NSF funding that it covers, but if you're going to do anything like this and get NSF funding, you've got to go through this.
It's probably not the same for the straight up researcher and the professor who's applying.
Yeah, probably
through his school. And
this is corporate. Yeah.
And again, Michael's the expert on this. He just that was the
point. And he is the one who identified this opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
So and FSU jumped all over it when he offered to do this training, and he already had. He's done the training before himself in a previous role, but. So he didn't have to go develop a bunch of materials. He did some updating, but he just jumped right in.
So the training that he's doing himself is what I'm going to call number one, not the I-Corps.
Not I-Corps, no.
Right. He's so
not
number
doing the
one
I-Corps
is
training.
Actually going to take some of our effort to make it happen.
Yes.
The I-Corps stuff, we're just kind of putting it all together, and it's
facilitating. Yeah, getting participants space, food, and bringing those people in, but they're paying all those expenses. Because they have grant funding to do that.
The course he teaches, will they receive college credit?
No, it's not a college credit course.
The course he's teaching is training on how to access these funds and further assistance
to
help
do
people
grant
apply.
These grant particular grant applications that are designed for commercializing both university research and then other. The SBIR, I think, is a little more flexible, but it's more small business. But my understanding generally is that there are a number of agencies that have to allocate a certain amount of funds of their budget for R&D and these types of activities. So the agencies are actually funding this. I think there's also a database of things that these agencies are looking for. And I think you can match up what you do with the things they're looking for, and that's kind of how they go about that process. But I don't know everything there's to know about. So hang on to those questions for Michael when he's here for the board meeting, because that's really what I want him to talk about, or those two programs in more depth.
Two quick things.
Yes, ma'am.
So one, we know that we're open to this, but I think the I-Corps program has the ability to be an example going forward of how we identify a need. We don't have to own it. We can partner with everybody.
Right.
But we're going to be the hub, the facilitator to identify and bring these opportunities in and advertise them as we start to tell the story more strategically, and we have more to tell in the next couple of years. I just wanted to highlight that really is a critical point, and let's be honest, that's the criticism we hear of OEB. Hopefully it changes and everything in the future. We're positioning ourselves well. So I like that.
And I'm conveying that to Michael, the importance of all of that. And this is the SBIR CTR is in cooperation with FAMU on funding, but it's actually serving everyone in the community, mm-hmm. both universities and everyone else.
Is there somewhere in here the opportunity for a news release discussing this?
And we're going to work on this. It's moved so quickly there hasn't been time. And yeah. frankly, this first one is sort of with SBIR, CTR, it's kind of a trial, a demo. Let's see how it works, and then we'll get ready to do the next one with FSU. We'll have more information, but yeah, we're gonna promote the heck out of it. Talk about what we're doing.
Good.
And if I can finish, the there are others involved as well, particularly with I-Corps. With I-Corps, there's been some involvement of DOMI in some of this, and some others. But the I-Corps is looking like it might actually replace a program that the College of Engineering was doing with DOMI and with the Florida Institute for Commercialization of Public Research, which was called TCAP. And don't ask me to tell you what that means.
Yeah. It's going away, I don't care.
Technology Commercialization something program. And it was an education program kind of modeled after I-Corps.
Yeah.
But funded in part with some small grants from FSU and FAMU, and it was held, I believe it was held at DOMI. And they had a hard time getting participation. Mm. So what they're looking at now is folding that program into this I-Corps program that Michael is helping to facilitate. Because it has a more clear pathway, I think, to the full-blown 50 grand that we can get. So
the grand prize. So I'm just trying also in my mind to keep track of what the draw on our resources, meaning personnel, also is. And I don't have any idea what it takes for Michael to teach one of these. It sounds like he's got it all prepped up.
It's
he knows exactly
hours,
what
yeah.
he's doing. So he's not having to develop a curriculum.
Yep. How many weeks?
Yeah.
Well, the SBIR CTR is just a one-shot.
One-shot.
It's like a workshop.
Yeah, it's
grant,
just a
grant
workshop.
Writing workshop.
Yeah.
Kind of.
And trust me, I'm being very
I'm sure you are.
Cognizant of his time and where he's spending it. And we've pulled him back on a couple of things. One opportunity is you can actually create your own. Alabama was interested in having us create our own node for the Southeast, and which was kind of weird, but. And which we would get grant funding, but we would have to provide the trainers. And I'm like, no, we're not going there. That's not what we're after right now. So I'm trying to keep his eye on the prize, which is the incubator and that facility, not getting drawn into too many different things. But this is serves a purpose that supports the incubator.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And then the other thing he's working on, because to me one of the keys to I hate to call it, say, competitive advantage, but it is a competitive advantage. The key for us in terms of our incubator, in terms of what it will be able to provide that others won't, is that connection to the university and Innovation Park resources. So he has started working on that as well, in developing that connection and network into the universities to figure out how to provide that access. So, those are the kinds of things that we're working on, but again, this was sort of low-hanging fruit for him. And that's where he's at. Right now, the other piece is the grant funding. What I've asked him to do is to, because of the way all of the EDA grant stuff is going to have to come together kind of at the same time, we're going to have a meeting real soon with the universities to say, we're looking at $15 to $20 million, okay? We need your help. We need your participation. And Gary Ostrander's already been teed up with it.
To
help fund the incubator.
Yeah.
So Tim Moore has been teed up for it. We met with him, both of them, individually. And I don't know if there's going to be opportunity for city and county participate in some way. I throw it out there.
There should be.
And or state. You know, how can we pull as many partners together as possible to get some funding? So what I've asked Michael to start thinking about is the pitch. You know, what is the pitch? Just like we're asking our startup businesses to make pitches. Well, he's going to have to make a pitch at some point as to why all these players need to come together and participate in this and start thinking about what we're doing like a startup business and be ready to do that. So he's working on that. He's got some timelines set up, on different pieces and parts that we're working on. So is he moving as fast as I'd like? No, but I'm not moving as fast as I'd like either. But it's all, I think, necessary what we're doing.
And at some point, he will have to be able to communicate that pitch to us.
Oh, absolutely.
That's supposed to be part of what we're doing, and it's a lot to keep in your brain and to be able to say to somebody in 2 minutes. Yeah.
Yep.
There are more moving parts than there were 2, 3, 4 years ago.
Lots. Lots. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
This all sounds, hey, this is April. Yeah. It all sounds really good. I really would love to hear more about FSU's, you know, commitment to this and how they, you know, how they are sort of integrating it into their DNA. Because I think that we heard so much about how that was so critical. And so I think everything that we can do and everything we can learn and sort out with FSU will just be very, very important.
Absolutely. And like I said, I think Michael has done a great job, particularly with FSU, in getting connected into their Office of Commercialization. And he's definitely on Gary Ostrander's radar in terms of what we're working on. I think Gary and Eric are just waiting for the pitch. You know, what do you need? I think when Eric went with us to Gainesville and Alachua, I think he saw it, and I think he said it in the subsequent board meeting that I think they're ready to participate. It's just a matter of we've got to have the right pitch ready to go for them with as much detail as we can give them.
Dave, on this subject, but a couple others I've heard of recently, I think Gary and by extension the president, others at FSU, I mean, but Gary's going to be the one we go to first. And Ron, you have done a good job positioning this in the appropriate way. We even talked about the trail, whatever it might be, that I think we're at that point where we have said we're going to do X for a long time, and they know that we've invested a lot to get there, and that will help in that pitch. And they already see our commitment,
yeah.
Whether it's feasibility or Michael or other investments out here, leasing the buildings, whatever it might be. I think we've done a lot of the groundwork that if we had gone to them 3 years ago, we weren't ready to, but we knew enough not to ask for any help at that point.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way. Is that?
Yep. And yeah. Again, and things like Michael give us credibility in terms of our ability to execute on these things. So
mm-hmm.
I think these little steps that we're taking show them, hey, there's some value there. And it might be worth, you know, investing in some of that. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it all gives them stuff that they want and need. So,
Gary and I have had a little bit of discussion about a time in which it would be appropriate for him to attend a board meeting and maybe make a 10-minute presentation or so on some of the things that he's thinking about at FSU. Would this be the upcoming meeting? And, again, it's kind of hard to get on Gary's schedule without a lot of notice. But or should we wait till another meeting later on?
What's the next meeting?
June
7th.
And then August would be the last one of the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. June would probably be better, but I don't know whether you
Let
think
me see
you
if
can
I can
it.
Arrange to get
or
him here
I don't
in
want
June
to speak then. Over you if you think the agenda is too full.
It's mostly this stuff, which most of it will go on consent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thought I have, Dave, I think it's good, and I think we're about there. Is there any benefit to looking at the agenda that's coming to get Gary here for a presentation at a time when he may also hear an update in the room, say from Michael or other things? And maybe that is this meeting.
I think that's where that meeting's going to be. Yeah.
Right. I mean, but he's already heard these programs. He's read into those. I just didn't know.
I believe so, yes.
For example, just rent, but. In August, if Collins RFQ were finished by that point, I'm just asking a question. I don't know, but is it more strategic to invite him at a time when we can also show something else? Again, I don't know. I would be content to let all of you figure that out based on what's on the agenda.
If his schedule is tough to get on.
That's
if we post to him June with a fallback on the August meeting. That gives us 2 shots at getting him.
I mean, the agenda goes out next Thursday for the June board meeting.
I'll put a call into his office today to see if I can reach him.
Okay.
Or tomorrow. sometime.
Yeah, you never know, and August is such a busy time when school
starts. That's
when
school starts
again. So. Two shots are better than one.
Yep.
Getting in here, so.
Yep. Okay, back to the agenda. We have provided to you draft minute meetings of the March 8th meeting. The chair has reviewed those, found no revisions seem to be appropriate. Does either member present or on the phone have any revisions, modifications to the draft minutes? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the minutes as presented?
So moved.
Motion's made. Is there a second? Any further discussion? Since both have voted yes, the minutes are approved.
Well, April does still get to vote.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay, that's right. She does get to vote. Okay. April, do you want to vote on this?
I did say aye.
Aye, all right. Okay. We would have had you outnumbered anyhow 2-1 if you voted no.
Okay.
Just for the record.
All right. Let's talk about the Morgan Building lease amendment. And
yeah, you previously approved the lease. After the approval of the lease, is when we found out about SBDC terminating their lease effective May 31st. Also, we had a challenge with the occupancy level per square foot, and so we had to get FSU to take more square footage for the number of people that they were bringing over. And so they deleted a couple of offices and added some more square footage. So what we're doing is we're increasing it to 13 from 11,000 to 13,000 square feet over a couple of steps, and increasing the monthly rental from 15,000 to 18,000 a month.
So first it had to be less, and then it had to be more.
Yes, because they decided not to take those two offices, and then as soon as SBDC becomes available June 1st, then they take over the rest. That's
and what will the net effect be to the bottom line?
Ballpark is $3,000 a month.
Improvement,
yeah.
Okay, good. All right.
So, and there, it's a 12-month lease, but 10 of it,
yeah.
You know, it depends. There's month to month after the first 12 months, and my guess is it probably stays a little longer. The construction always takes longer than you think.
Usually it does. Okay.
Move approval.
Motion is made. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Motion to approve the partial release of lease to the National Magnetic Lab. Parcels. I'm sorry, on six. I'm on the wrong one. Jump forward.
Yep.
The Morgan Building lease. Signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed by like sign. Motion carries. Now let's talk about the lease to the National Magnetic Lab.
Okay. In the tradition of old government stuff that never happened, should have happened. I got an email from DEP related to the transfer of property back in 1991 for the Mag Lab. Apparently, they never did a release of the lease. That's the same kind of transaction we did when we did the restructuring, which is to basically take it off of our lease. I did find a quick claim deed that covered all but one or two of the parcels. Clearly, this was done. It was intended to be done. This just cleans up the paperwork for DEP that requested it. I asked Melissa to review it because initially the release had a bunch of indemnity language, and I just said we're not going to indemnify them for anything from 1991. So
good for you.
Well, I had good counsel. She told me not to do that. So it's pretty straightforward.
Okay.
I move that we submit this to the board for its approval.
Yes, and it's
with our recommendation.
With a recommendation for approval.
Yeah.
And
second.
It does require the higher ed partners to approve because it's the land. It's related to the land.
At the board meeting.
At the board meeting. Yes.
Yeah.
They have to be in the room and vote on it.
Correct.
They don't have to approve it.
Correct.
I mean, I'm sure they will.
They have to
but
be present.
That just,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they have to be present. Okay.
Okay. Motion's made. We have a second. Do you have further comment or question?
No, it's just I assume this was uncovered because of the work they want to do at the Mag Lab. And we don't need to go and look at any of the other. I mean, if there's other mistakes, they'll come out eventually.
I think this was DEP.
This was on DEP at this point.
I think this was just
okay.
DEP doing their some document review of something.
I see.
And there was no explanation as to how they found it. It's just they found it.
Interesting.
And frankly, it doesn't really matter.
No, it's all state.
I don't think it really matters.
It's always better for us to have the record.
It's good to be clean, but yeah. Absolutely. But in terms of the cost of trying to research more, we've done some digging on some things, just trying to find easements and, you know, for the trail and all this. And some of this old documentation is just a nightmare to try to wade through.
It always is.
I got served in North Carolina 2 weeks ago because I was the last person to sign a document at SunTrust Bank in 1995 that never got recorded by the person who had it on the board.
Yeah, we're going to depose you and see what you remember about that.
Yeah, thank you.
Wow.
I called council and they said, just don't show up, it'll flow through.
Well, I think at some point you have to look at cost benefit of trying to get drilled down on this stuff and I don't think it's worth the cost.
That was going to be my question. So. Okay.
All right. Next we have a discussion regarding.
I don't think we voted.
Was there a vote?
Well, we had motions. We did not vote.
Yes.
I think we did vote. At least we had motions. We'll vote again for clarification.
Okay, you tell us if we voted. Okay.
Please vote.
Okay, we have
vote.
A motion.
Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by like sign. Aye. Motion carries. Ann made the motion and April made the second.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Innovation Park Tech Grant Award agreements.
Okay, so we had our tech grant elevator pitch tonight and I thought it went pretty well. And most of it went smoothly, except, you know, we had a little hiccup on the first presentation. He elected to put it in presentation mode, and that's what showed on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So we took care of that going forward. So,
I don't understand what you're saying.
Presentation,
I'm just
curious. PowerPoint.
Yeah.
So presentation mode, the viewer can see on their monitor, like the slide and their notes and all of that. Well,
what's coming up?
So that showed,
what's the next slide going to look like?
Yeah.
And that showed on the big screen.
Yeah.
So everybody got to see it. It was a little distracting, but.
Yeah, that's
not good. Ron, I thought the quality of the presentations were very good, with maybe one exception. I think the decision we made several years ago to have mentors up front working with them was an excellent decision. And I compliment you, Peggy, Denise, all who worked on it. I know it was very well run.
Yeah, they did a great job. What I really like is I don't have to do a whole lot anymore.
Yeah.
Denise and Peggy did a great job. Peggy did all those centerpieces.
You did them all yourself?
Fresh greenery, courtesy of Innovation Park.
There's a lot of greenery.
We had to clip the greenery all around the park.
But
no poison ivy.
Denise did a great job with the whole organization. You should see, and she kept getting nervous because it was running so smoothly that she's like,
What was the attendance like?
We don't have a final count, I don't think, but
we had 92 vote, and we were certainly at capacity.
We had
130 people away.
She had capped it at 136.
That's great.
Which is what we could see.
That's great.
We did have some no-shows. The weather was horrible.
Yeah.
But still, it was pretty good.
I would like us to give a little more thought on how we expand the audience, how we expand the, notification to the community of what this is all about and how we attract more people there.
Yeah.
But the Goodwood venue wouldn't hold anymore.
No, we were at capacity on Goodwood.
Yeah. We have to go someplace.
Yeah.
There might be things that we could do, though, like televising it or making it available to people streaming, that we could promote around doing it as Facebook Live, you know, lots of different things we could do.
I did do an interview with WTXL.
Mm-hmm.
So they did that the day before. WTXL actually showed up at the event, which was great.
Yeah.
So we did get a little press out of that.
WFSU.
Yeah,
so.
Great.
Oh, WFSU.
And I have to say, our firm has been a coach for the last couple of years, and it was unfortunately our team, it was Weather Tiger that we had coached, and we were so disappointed that the technical problems, I think, overshadowed his presentation, but he was ready. It was just one of those things.
Yeah, I think he actually scored like first in the audience votes. Yeah, absolutely. It was the most bizarre outcome I think I've seen in the 6 years that I've been doing it. And it's we had two presentations that weren't very good, and it was mainly just I don't think the folks practiced it. They just didn't look like they practiced at all. One
had
no, understanding of a microphone and how it worked.
The microphone down here.
And he came in second place. So the reason that it was so bizarre is because the first and second place had the worst presentations. The first and second place on the submissions and their business plans came in first and second place. So and then they, but they were fourth and fifth on the judges in terms of their presentation. Hmm. So that opened it up for the third place team, who ended up coming in first, because they got third place in, I think, in both their submission and I think maybe in the judging. So it just the way the scoring worked out. And I'm real happy with the scoring. I think with changing to a ranking-based scoring and not having raw scores involved, kind of like what we've talked about in the RFP evaluations, all the issues that come up when you have raw scores aggregated because everybody's got a different scale in their head. Mm-hmm. This takes that out. So anyway.
I think that's smart, yeah.
Question, so do you think that I know there are multiple objectives to this whole thing, but do you think that the most worthy projects got the money? Or is that just asking a question that you can't answer? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think you can answer that because, as we've said before, that the VCs only get it right 1 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And our judging panel isn't, they're not VCs.
Right.
I think I do like the first place team, but the challenge with them is that they're looking to license their technology. They're not actually looking to start a business.
That was my problem with it.
Yeah.
It wasn't job growth here. It wasn't anything like that.
It could be.
It could be, but that's not what they were looking for.
Right, exactly. They're looking to license it, and if they license it, they're going to license it to, you know, Medtronics or some big company.
It was diabetes.
That, yeah, some big company that is just going to take and go manufacture it somewhere else. Or finish development or whatever they end up doing with it. But
does that need to be something in the future that we
articulate? It's one of the elements in the judging.
Yeah.
But it's one element.
Yeah.
There is a requirement that your business will be in Tallahassee, but you know
for how long
and all that. Okay. So this is kind of a challenge. This is where we do our own postmortem,
and
go through all of this, and we have some ideas on how to make it better. For example, we're talking about after the PR coaches. Well, for one thing, giving the PR coaches a little more direction on some things that need to be in the presentation, and maybe say, hey, you know, keep it to 5 slides. Make sure you got a use of funds slide in there, that kind of stuff. Be a little more specific.
Yeah, we considered lavalier and people were.
Well, we tried that. We had all kinds of challenges with that. But the other is that when they're done, the week before the pitch, is they come in and pitch to us. They do a practice run in front of us, and we critique them, let them hold a microphone, let them hold the clicker, that kind of stuff, so that they're at least we...
In theory.
At least, and because I think one of the challenges, like I said, I don't think the two that really did poorly, I don't think they practiced.
Well, and in some sense, if you don't practice, you get what you deserve.
Right,
so.
And that was kind of what we came to in our postmortem was look, these people, if they're going to run a business, we can't hold their hand through the whole process. We can, you can have coaches like, you know, like April, and they can lead them, but you know they can't make them drink, right?
Yeah. So.
And whether, if you look at Weather Tigers' reach already, what they've already done.
Yeah.
The logos they can put up, the team, the companies they're working with, it's hard to see how you don't see potential in this and that you're investing in something that is really worthwhile and it's going, I mean, it's already going somewhere and it's just going to keep floating. So yes, you're right. You can't hold their hands through everything and even a great company might.
And
I'm sure your team did a great job, right? April, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and they had been through, Weather Tiger went through EEP, as did the second place team, Neuro Jungle.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been through, who else? Was any of the others? Footy didn't.
No.
No, the others hadn't gone. Mm-hmm. So the winners will get access to EEP. So there's a lot of cross-pollination that's happening there. But we keep tweaking it, and we keep trying to find ways to make it better.
My audit mind suggests that we be attuned and alert to the fact that no one of these presenters could load an audience up with 30 or 40 guests and get a huge audience.
Well, I'll be honest with you, our New Energy folks, they came in second in the presentation, and I can't figure out, for audience participant, I cannot figure out how that happened.
Well, that's why I suggest.
But the good news is this.
I don't know how we manage it.
It didn't make a difference.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's only 10%.
It could, though.
If it was really, really close,
then
it could.
But not necessarily.
But it's only 10%
of the score. Real life. You don't get to determine the outcome. We don't get to determine the outcome.
Yeah.
Well, it's like voting on Dancing with the Stars.
Yes, there's a popularity component.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things we're talking about is, look, this is for a different audience. This is not an investor audience.
Right.
Okay. This is a community audience, and so the level of expectation is different than it would be if we were doing an investor pitch. And if it was an investor pitch, we would do a heck of a lot more coaching. Okay, I think we tell the PR coaches, you know, an hour or two. And I don't know, April, how much time do you actually end up spending with these folks?
Probably 3 hours. You know, we did it over, we had it come in twice.
Okay. And that's kind of what we figure, you know, a couple of hours, but, you know, each one's going to be a little different in terms of what they need.
Yeah, and he spent a lot of time.
I saw him pitch at EEP, and he is a very good presenter. And as a matter of fact, he didn't really get rattled by the fact that they had the presentation mode stuff on top, you know, on the screen. He just kept going. So, and we debated on whether or not to stop it, but he had such a good flow going that we figured, what the heck, it's, you know, and I don't think it hurt him. I really don't.
Well, what my question was ultimately getting to is that part of the purpose is to get this money out to these people, but part of the purpose is for us. So is the event serving our purposes as well, which is to advertise ourselves, have a bunch of people there, let people know that good things are going on, et cetera. So it isn't just about, you know, the people and whether the best person gets the money. It's bigger than
and there's
that.
There's another component to this now that we really couldn't do much with in the past, and that's the follow-up that happens after. We didn't have the capacity to really do a lot of follow-up with these folks and coaching and mentoring, and then also how to facilitate them into business incubation. So that's part of what we're looking at as well, is what role can Michael play in follow-up with these folks and help make sure that they stay on track and hit some benchmarks and hurdles and so we're working on that as well.
All right, cool. One more?
Yeah, I'm going to go to next year. Great conversation about this year, but next year, thinking about the audience, the numbers, all of that, just brainstorming here so I can drop this and we can talk about it more in the future, but or not at all. Y'all know I've felt strongly for a long time, you do too, about telling the story. I think it is the year in FY19 that is to do some kind of community event or multiple community events. I hear this even from our friend Ray Bai, who loves what we're doing. Once he got read into it, into what's happening, he is saying others need to know this.
Yeah.
He is now a surrogate for us because he knows what we're doing and he had talked with you. I mean, it's fantastic. I am wondering if we're at a point right now, and I think there's various ways to frame this, of moving it to a larger space. Oh. The crowd is good, but they are people who already know what Innovation Park is doing. They come most years. And it's not an incredibly diverse crowd in any of the typical ways we'd say that, but not diverse in getting outside of the business community that has been supportive of us. And we are at capacity, and we're going to fill up every year at Goodwood. So we stay with that group. The video interludes in between the presentations are fabulous. They're going back and showing past winners. What just came to my mind, and again, this is in the moment, is Turnbull Center a tabletop for every past winner that we, or since we started doing the pitches. They get to talk, but if we built in something like, I don't even know if this is a good idea, but it's been 9 years since the troubled times. We're getting ready for the next decade. Let's do the video interludes of what's happening at Innovation Park. Let's thank the board members over the last 9 years for getting us to this new position. That gets a huge, another whole crowd coming in, and it can be, they're not coming just to hear an Innovation Park pitch, but they'd be coming to hear the substance, but getting that little bit in between, I think the crowd would expand, I think other things. Again, this is just some thoughts that were coming to mind as you're describing this. I could see it 100 different ways, but yeah. I wouldn't mind hearing your thoughts, Denise, in a month, couple months, whenever, about, or anybody else, whether or not this successful event is one that we could build on to showcase some of this other messaging that we need to do and build the audience, or if there needs to be some other type of event or both or whatever. So
I'm sort of of the opinion that if our organization's not tooting its own horn, nobody enjoys our music. So my thought process is that how do we get maybe faculty of students who are in entrepreneurial programs, how do we get Jim Moran, folks involved in it, how do we get the press more involved in it? I just think there are a lot of different ones.
Yeah.
And maybe it's the chair and our executive director do a 60-day outreach to them before the program and get some commitments from them. Maybe there's some way you could involve them, some little tiny piece in there, so that it mandates that they get to, that they participate with us in it, or I don't mean as a sponsor or a partner or a presenter, but somehow we drag them in.
Put them on the judging panel.
Yeah, something like that.
Denise,
yeah.
Denise, maybe we could schedule a brainstorming session on this where we could come back to the executive committee and the board with, you know, some big ideas on how we might be able to structure this. And
that's a good idea.
Yeah, maybe we can do that one late afternoon, one evening, around a cocktail time or something. Good ideas come from cocktail time.
You can't do that unless we notice it.
Correct.
April, this is Kristen. Yeah, I think if you, I think brainstorming is good. I think mapping this out for a year or so, Ron, again, I'm sensitive to your workload, but we've been teeing this up for a while, so
yep.
I think this is a year we're going to have a lot of stories to tell. So brainstorming, April, Denise, whatever, I think would be great. But
April,
just
so you know, Denise is not in the room right now.
Yeah.
If you picked up on that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and I understand that we can certainly take input. If once we do some initial brainstorming, and we'll be able to come up with, you know, a series of types of things that we could do, that then the board would have something to key off of and to offer other suggestions and ideas.
All right, in the essence of time,
okay.
Unless you got one thing you really need to do.
One thing I want to say is Denise is also working on some other events.
Yes.
So this is not going to be our only event.
And Ron, that's
That this is where I think we can be as the most help. Ron is on things like this, where we can bring our team together to support her and
absolutely,
pass
some
ideas.
That's fantastic.
All right, we have a staff recommendation to approve the awarding of the $10,000 and $15,000 prize. Is there a motion to that effect?
Moved.
I'll second.
Motion made and seconded that we approve the agreement. Does this have to go on to the board?
Yes, mm-hmm. Everything okay. You approve will at least go on the consent agenda.
So. All right, so these items will be going to the board with our recommendation. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed
aye.
By like sign. Motion carries. Let's talk about restrooms now.
Okay. Wait for that one.
Yay, Stephanie.
As you know, in the budget we have $100,000 to renovate two different sets of restrooms, some inside Morgan, some in the Don Fuquay atrium areas. Right, Stephanie is tackling the first set on her own, basically bidding out each of the components and acting as her own general contractor. So none of the things that she's doing are more than $10,000, so I'm able to approve all the individual pieces and parts. It's all within the budget that that's been approved, except for the partitions in the restrooms. That dollar amount is $11,068. I requested at the time that Chair Ramsey approve those bids, the bid that she did receive, which was the $11,068. We received a second bid, which was $21,700. The third vendor declined the bid, and basically what everyone was telling Stephanie is, the person that's got your low bid is the same person that we would get our bid from. Mm-hmm. So they're the primary supplier for this kind of stuff in Tallahassee. So,
okay.
So that was our recommendation, that we go ahead and accept, first of all, only receiving two bids, but then to accept the $11,068 bid.
That sounds good to me.
And we're also dealing, as I use the word urgency, mm-hmm. as it relates to restrooms. there's a sense of urgency in getting this done because of FSU IT services. Mm-hmm. What we need to get these atrium ones done so that when we move into Morgan Building, we have some place to
send people.
Someplace to go.
I move approval to put an end to the puns.
Okay, is there a motion then to approve the restroom petition bid?
I'll take Ann's motion and second that. Yes, as amended.
Those in favor of the bid for restroom petitions, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Next, we'll talk about janitorial services and the RFP for it.
So the contract is up for janitorial services. We last bid it 3 years ago. It is expected to be over $50,000, primarily because, and we'll have to wait because I think we'll need a quorum.
We're not voting, but I think you can continue the discussion.
I don't know if she wants to hear this, but. So basically, it's another janitorial services RFP, very similar to the last RFP that we did. We expect the dollar amount to be over $50,000, mainly because we have all this occupied space right now, and the contract is per square foot. So we have to do an RFP. The RFP is included in your packet. Like I said, it's the schedule's in there. The expectation is that myself and Talcor will evaluate the responses that we get. And then provide those recommendations to the executive committee for their review and approval, rather than having a formal evaluation committee for janitorial services. It's pretty cut and dry.
Staff comfortable with the support we have now, the vendor we have now?
Yes.
And will they be rebidding, you think?
I hope so, but I will tell you that the principal person in that company was in a horrible car accident a few weeks ago. So, I think
that's going to change.
Yeah, so we're not sure what's going to happen there. So, and it's a family, basically, it's a family
just
business.
Just about to ask that. I thought it was.
There is a daughter that's involved in the business, is my understanding, who has been being groomed to take over before all this happened. So, we'll see what happens there. But what I'll tell you is, first and foremost, is the value of the service we receive has most to do with the person that they have out here. This gentleman's been out here for quite some time, as long as I've been here. Mm. And he does a phenomenal job. And he's very personable and does whatever anybody asks him to do. I mean, just very responsive to what people need. So we'll see.
Governor Dozier will recall back when she and I first came on the board that there were many complaints from tenants about the quality of janitorial service.
Yeah. And, we don't get complaints.
So that's good. Okay, there is then a recommendation from staff to approve the issuance of an RFP for janitorial services. Is there a motion to accept that staff recommendation or request?
You want to take this one, April, so Peggy can
sure, yeah.
I'll second it.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
So, affirmative, so no other vote. Property Management Accord, accounting services for the RFP coming up for that one. Staff, you have the floor.
Yeah, this is the fun one that we have to do. Again, we last did this 3 years ago. Their contract is up September 30th, the contract with Talcorp. The RFP is substantially the same as the previous RFP. I have endeavored to make many clarifications on the nature of the contract to avoid any controversy like we had last time, in which the one of the bidders didn't understand what they were bidding on and bid a crazy high price because they thought it was, it included the actual costs of repairs and maintenance and salaries and all that stuff rather than just their fee.
Was that actually 3 years ago?
Yeah. It was.
Time flies.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this one, we are recommending that the chair form a committee to evaluate proposals. I'd recommend a committee of three. That committee will evaluate proposals and make recommendations to the board as far as contract award goes.
Three members, five members, what do you need?
Three is what I would recommend.
All right.
But if more want to, I mean.
But does that mean three board members? Or does it mean?
I think at minimum you have three board members. I don't know if you want to add others, but the challenge I think with this one is you start getting into conflicts of interest, and it is a very competitive proposal process.
I would not have any conflicts of interest, for instance, but I don't bring much to the table, frankly. Yeah. I mean, I would love to be able to have some people on the committee or sitting with the committee who know what they're looking at. I wouldn't.
Well, this is property management and accounting. Okay.
Do I hear any volunteers that are present in the room today? April? Mm-hmm. Also included, but not in the room today.
I would do it if I would be helpful. I would do it, but frankly, there are probably other people who would be a lot better.
And we can wait till the board meeting to talk about that.
All right, let's do that.
Okay.
I'm willing, but right now I'm out of town on the 16th of July, which is something else to let committee members know if that's our timeline.
The schedule, the proposed schedule is in there.
So. Right.
The
presentations.
I'm out of town starting on the 3rd of July for 2 weeks.
And I know this is going to be a challenge.
So that is a factor there on the timeline. We have to give them enough time that if we had to move it a little bit towards August, is that possible? If we could, you can fill out three members of the committee, probably.
The main thing is getting on the agenda for the August 2nd.
Oh, right, of course.
And we'll have, you say you're going to be out of town? When are you out? Because we'll have to have an exec committee meeting as well. Don't have to, but otherwise it's got to go on the board agenda for them to, the board would have to then consider the evaluation of the results, and that gets a little more complicated.
Well, let's do this. Let's vote to at least right now proceed with approving the staff's request for it. Then Ron and I can get back together and see if we can work out finding three board members that could participate, willing to participate. Does that suit everybody?
Yes.
That's me.
If you need me, I will know by the 7th whether or not I'm in town, because I had another meeting pop up on the 19th, so things may be changing, but it was for that week, so... I'll know, but you guys may not want me on it.
This is why I put the schedule together, just so everybody can kind of see... Perfect. The way we think it's going to flow. I start with the board meeting and work my way backwards.
Mm-hmm. This particular one, I think it would be, and you may be already thinking of doing this, but valuable to remind the board about the cone of silence, because these companies are involved in a lot of different ways, and people may not. We don't often hit one like this that is this high profile and
tenfold services. We don't usually have that issue.
No. So
yes, I will do that. It's also in the RFP for the bidders.
They know it.
They know it.
Reminding board members would probably be good.
Yep. They should know it.
I will remind them. At the board
go ahead and remind them
when it goes on the consent agenda.
Right, is there a motion to respond to staff's request for the issuance of an RFP for county and property management services?
Well,
Whichever.
Yeah, I move to do what you said.
Okay. And you second?
I second what Ann said that you said.
There is a motion on the floor that we accept staff's request to allow them to prepare a RFP for property management and accounting services. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by like sign. No notes, no opposition. Motion carries.
And just so you know, on these, both of these, we are going to go ahead and submit the ad to promote it tomorrow, so that it will hit the paper on the couple of days after the board meeting. So whenever we said the 8th and the 11th of June. So I don't anticipate the board won't ratify it, but I guess if they don't ratify it, we could just say, never mind.
Yeah.
We're not.
If they don't, we get their calculators out and start writing checks or whatever.
There you go.
Nice job, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Next, we have a staff request for approval of an agreement with Florida A&M University for the authority to develop and operate a comprehensive small business innovation research, small business technology transfer training program, and to receive $45,000 in Economic Development Administration Regional Innovation Funding over a three-year period to be matched by internal authority funds in the form of salaries and benefits. That's a long one.
And that's not even all of it, but yeah.
I know.
This is the program we were just talking about. This is an opportunity for us to receive funding to develop this program and to implement it. It will be matched with Michael's salaries and benefits, so it's not like we have to come out of pocket for additional funds. But that's part of the dedicating his time, really, is that piece. This agreement is not finalized. We have been pulling teeth trying to get FAMU to provide us with a final agreement. I think it's going to look substantially like this because this is kind of their boilerplate. The real thing for us is the scope of work, which is at the end, which is what we agreed with David Teague at FAMU on what that's going to look like. So what I'm asking is that the chair be given some latitude on approving any changes to the language. If I get an agreement soon enough, I can get it on the board agenda. But I really want to get this in place so we can actually start receiving some of their money.
Sounds good to me, Ann.
Has council reviewed the document?
No.
That's
well, I take that back. She has reviewed this document, but she has not, obviously, she hasn't reviewed the final agreement.
Well,
but I can do that. We can do that to make sure the final agreement goes through her, subject to that.
Yes.
It's just like I said, I can't get anything back out of them. I said, and I had asked them for the original agreement, but yes, we can do that.
So they are doing the drafting.
Yes.
And we're doing the review. That's good. Okay.
And a lot of it is just their boilerplate on these kinds of grant awards and sub grant recipients. But if you have some thoughts on some of it you want to provide, that's fine.
Nope.
Councilor, we're welcome to hear any suggestions you have. So.
No, I do not. I just want to make sure that somebody who knows what they're doing looks at the agreement as a whole and is happy with it.
We enjoy reading things like this.
or gets paid to do it.
Yeah,
at least.
You know, and this is not, there's not a lot of complexity to what we're actually doing.
Yeah.
It's very simple. Mm-hmm. It's really about... What does it take to get a check out of them? What do we have to submit?
Yeah.
And then what do we have to do to meet their requirements? The dollar amount doesn't rise to the level of any sort of audits or, they have some basic requirements of their own, but in terms of getting a federal audit, the whatever that audit is, it's left me. But
can you scroll up just a little? I just want to look again at what comes after the scope of. Okay.
It's 15 pages of baloney.
Yeah.
The legalese.
Yeah, just, all their statutory requirements and...
Yeah, and I'm
like
basically
and,
familiar
yeah.
with all that stuff, and we're not going to get any of that changed.
No, that's the thing. They're going to say, we have to have this stuff. The only thing I had any heartburn over had to do with some stuff related to intellectual property that they would own and, it's boilerplate, but
Yeah, but it's not applicable to...
This is not intellectual property. This is all federal government programs, and and we're just teaching their programs, basically. So,
well, I am almost certain that Melissa has experience looking at agreements of exactly this type. So, if she looks at it and says it's okay with me. And then trying to get it done, you're right, that's always the
timing,
the problem.
Yeah. Is there a motion to approve the staff recommendation?
I move with my caveat that it be reviewed by general counsel.
Okay. Motion's made to approve with the stipulation that general counsel review the document first. Any further discussion?
One quick.
Yes.
You're right, no audit, other things like that, but I do think we're getting into a territory here where we will be associated with other EDA grants at the same time as we are building on our relationship with the EDA, which is critically important. So I'm not that worried about this. But I know firsthand that EDA staff knows the difference between different organizations in our area, and can recognize that when different applications come in and they are eager for other applications. So I'm not that worried. I mean, if there's any problem on FAMU's side with this grant or anything like that, I hope not, I don't think so, but I don't think that's a danger. On the other side, being able to say we dotted our I's and crossed our T's and everything probably builds a history here with the EDA, that even when we're partnering with other recipients, we're in a good place. So anything we can show, just taking that extra step, I think helps in the future. Maybe not, but
yeah, and
we're getting into new
territory. I don't even know what role EDA has in terms of reviewing these internal documents in terms of how they contract with sub recipients. So
I don't know if they do any review.
No.
I do know of times when locals go into a DC office and talk about their partnerships and how they've executed on the grant to greater or lesser success.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I'm.
We
want to be as straight shot as
absolutely
possible.
And so we, when Michael and I met with Tim Moore, we talked a little bit about this, and the big thing is David is really good at getting grants. Okay, he's not real good at execution,
right?
And so they're getting other folks involved in the execution piece. They also have a contractor that they've hired as part of this to go out and set up these rural incubation small business incubation program. So
David's
is a
FAMU officer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think your point is really well taken. You know, the more it gets real complicated real fast, and this compliance stuff.
And this is our first shot at trying to do this kind of partnership. Well, that worked. The last one we tried to, we didn't get the money, but. So, and it's a relatively small amount of the big piece that they have, because it's, I think, the combined of a couple of grants they have, they're working on is over a million. I think this one's like 485,000 or something. But so this is a really small chunk of the bigger picture. But that's what the whole point is, to get more of that collaboration with other community organizations. So this demonstrates that we can do this, that we can all work together, and that that FAMU can be a conduit for the funding. So.
And that's why this is incredibly good for us in the position we are right now. We just got to make sure all of our I's are dotted and T's crossed, as we would always. But I think it's just, So, okay.
Okay, is there a motion?
Yeah, we got a motion in a second.
And then any further discussion beyond your comments? Those in favor of the proposal of the recommendation, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by right sign. Motion carried. Okay, you started talking a little bit about formation of the nonprofit and so on. Do you have further comment?
Yeah, previously the board had approved the creation of a nonprofit organization to facilitate receipt of charitable contributions where
was required.
The donor was required to restricted to only donating 501c3s.
Yeah.
So we've kind of been waiting for Michael to, you know, I was waiting for Michael to be hired and to do all of this work. But anyway, so we got with Melissa. She got with her Orlando 501c3 expert, and they created the organizational documents, the articles of incorporation, the bylaws. I'll be honest with you, I think this may require a more in-depth conversation, but there are some outstanding questions related to these documents. Number one is the purpose of the organization, and we have a placeholder in there right now, and that is that we have to have language in there that meets the IRS requirements for the charitable exemption that we're going to request in a separate application. There are three types of exemptions that you can go after. There may be more, but the three that we were considering. And we cannot agree with their attorney on which exemption we should be going after. Because we know from our experience in looking at certain types of business incubators that typically they get an education exemption. It's an educational organization.
Mm-hmm.
He is saying, no, this is, you don't meet that requirement. And that was my reaction. But and so what we're in the process of doing is Michael is reaching out to some of his, you know, his network to say, can I get some of your applications?
How does this work? Yeah.
Let's see some applications that actually got approved. I had one that I got from Carl Pan, who did our feasibility study, worked with Mark Long on the feasibility study. I got his from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Except he had to jump through a few hoops because of questions that they came back with, which they do. They ask questions. It's also kind of old.
Mm-hmm.
So with age, you know, I think they may, IRS may have learned a little bit about business incubation along the way and decided that, you know, it may work better. So anyway, we're trying to get some specific examples so we can come up with the correct language to get into this Articles of Incorporation that meets the 501c3 requirements. So otherwise, I think most of this is boilerplate, okay? The only other issues has to do with things like, okay, who's the registered agent? How many directors, who should be the initial officers and directors?
Could this be the executive committee serving as directors of that organization?
Well, the challenge we have is the conflicts of interest, okay? So where a nonprofit board member, as probably any other board member, has a conflict of interest, they would have to recuse themselves from voting. So
say that again.
Right, so if you're a board member, you've got a conflict of interest, you have to recuse yourself from voting.
I'm sorry, if you're a board member of what?
Of any organization.
If you have a conflict of interest on Elder Care Services Board, you would have to recuse yourself from a vote.
Yeah.
Are you then saying that
Innovation
Park would be the beneficiary?
Well, because of the relationship with Innovation Park and the transactions that will occur between Innovation Park and the 501c3,
I got you.
So there always will be a conflict, or for the most part, there will always be a conflict of interest between the members serving on both boards. So I think the general consensus has been, from what I've seen, is that the board should be different. Okay, I've talked to a number of different organizations, and that's what they do. They have separate boards.
I know the hospital board has some members from the board over on their foundation, and I think somebody on the foundation is over on the hospital board.
Yeah, and these sports, you know, what are they called? Direct support organizations, which is a whole thing in its, which I don't know much about, but
But my recommendation was, and I think what we have in there, is to have myself and two board members be the initial board of the organization, and it's their responsibility to figure out what the remaining boards should look like.
Well, here's a problem with that, and a little bit of a problem.
Can I get clarify just what he's talking about?
Yeah.
Yourself and two of our existing board members.
Yes.
But then you can't talk to them because individually, because of the sunshine.
It's not a sunshine board.
It's not a sunshine
board. It's a 501c3.
Not a sunshine board. Okay.
So as it relates to the 501c3.
But you're sitting in that room together.
This is the other reason why our board or four executive committee members shouldn't be the nonprofit executive committee or the nonprofit board, because we would be under sunshine talking about anything related to Innovation Park, and how could we not talk about Innovation Park in a 501c3 for Innovation Park?
Okay.
So I actually would say you and one board member and one critical partner or something like that, well, to keep the sunshine issues out of there. But
maybe we could find somebody like a Ray Bye or some folks like that who would have some really good interest in it.
Ray would like
Steve
to be
Evans
involved.
Or a Ray Bye, Steve Evans. I can name up a number of good ones that could be help us get this thing up and going.
That's a good idea.
And I want to thank Peggy for bringing up Ray Bye's name to come to the meeting the other day. That sparked a lot of interest.
It did.
And paid dividends.
And I had lunch with him after that, so we had a chance to get some more.
So Peggy, that was well done, well thought.
So you want, again, this is just the initial board.
Yeah.
The initial board, because we have to have a minimum of three, because you need three officers. You need a president, a vice president, and a secretary treasurer. And that's spelled out in these initial documents. Not to get a big head, but I'm just going to suggest that I be the president, only to so that I can execute documents and keep things moving.
But what salary?
I was thinking $1.50.
That's and that's high.
Okay, $1. $7.
When you, I'm sorry, but when you said we may need to discuss this more at the full board, is everybody pretty clear about what this really is for? Not just for tax purposes, but what it really is for. It's to raise money and give the money to us.
And give the money to
us.
Well,
not but us being LCRDA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
not us personally.
Well, it's not entirely. I mean, it will, the money that flows to LCRDA will strictly be fees for services or leases, or it's the funds will remain in the 501c3 to provide programs that meet the charitable purpose. Okay, so if it's education, it'll be education programs. But we're claiming the incubation services. All of those incubation services are going to fall under the charitable purpose. So there'll be other transactions that will happen within the 501c3. So I mean, all the operating expenses of the incubator. You know, to us, this organization will be the business incubation. So all of its revenue expenses will flow through there.
And this is something that happens in the incubation community.
Yes.
That this is the usual structure.
Yes.
It is
a common structure, but there are a number of different types of incubators and who they're affiliated with. And so we were trying to find one. He has an example of one that he worked for, which was actually created by an economic development organization. And that's the one we're trying to get our hands on. But yes, this is typical.
How would this differ from the FSU boosters at FSU?
I don't know enough about the FSU boosters. So.
That's a direct support organization, I think, and it has its own.
Those are statutory.
They're statutory. They have their own rules and regulations.
I know they spend a lot of their own money on things or their own projects. But
and I think they probably push the envelope a little bit on.
Well, so you're kind of getting toward my concern, and we're so far away from this, but I think it bears thinking about. This can get so complicated so quickly in terms of how much staff time, professional time, whatever it takes to keep the two sets of books, to make sure the coordination is happening correctly, you got the right stuff in the right. It's going to be very important how how it is done.
Yeah.
Or it's going to make everybody crazy.
Well, it's going to make everybody crazy anyway.
And it's probably going to make everybody crazy anyway. Yeah.
And
it's
going
to cost a lot of money.
It will cost money to
do it.
It absolutely will cost money to do it. it's the price of being able to get charitable contributions.
Yeah.
And you have to have the organization, and you have to have separate levels.
So it's a price to play.
So one of the things, one of the questions, the biggest question I had was, do we have to have a separate payroll? And basically that answer I got to is no, that we can do payroll, we can have LCRDA be the paymaster and basically lease employee time to the 501c3.
And again, the benefit that we get from being this, from being a nonprofit corporation, is
the ability to receive tax deductible contributions from organizations that could not otherwise contribute to us. Because we can, because you can make a a charitable contribution to a government entity,
mm-hmm.
Okay, state, local governments, I think even federal, but
some businesses
have restrictions on their ability.
Yes. Because
so
the first thing they do is when they're ready to make a charitable contribution, they go online and they search the IRS database with your EIN number, and if you don't come up, you don't get the money. Then you don't even get your application with that. A lot of it's electronic. And
that has, does that have to do with their tax position?
Yes.
Or with their purpose? The donors?
It could
both.
Be. It not really tax position. It's really their process. And it could be their requirements. They may have in their requirements that they only contribute to 501c3s.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
Even it doesn't say only contribute to those that qualify as if they were 501c3s, which is what we are.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
And so when we this is something we started a couple of years ago with the tech grant to say, you know, because some people were saying, hey, is this a charitable contribution? Well, we call them sponsorships, which is different, but
yeah.
You can deduct for business purposes anyway. But if some people want to call it charitable contribution, fine, you can do that. We give them the code section, the IRS code that says, yes, you can treat this government contribution because it is for our public purpose.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're on top of this. I was wondering if these changes in the tax code were going to change this enough so that doing it some different way might make more sense. I don't know.
And honestly, if I didn't have to do a 501c3, I wouldn't do it because, as you said, it is complicated. But
yeah.
But I do think there are opportunities to get that kind of funding, and that's.
And those opportunities are not individuals; they're mostly businesses.
They're more like foundations.
Foundations. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And a direct support organization can't get us there.
That would be, I think those are affiliated with universities, right?
I think they are.
Yeah.
But
well, Mission St. Louis, the Friends of Mission St. Louis, that's, I guess that is a state organization.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that's an interesting question, though, the Friends of groups.
Because we have the Friends of the Library group,
there's
too.
The Friends of everything, yeah.
Friends of the museum.
But are they, is that a DSO or is that a...
Friends of the Library is a 501c3.
The Friends of Mission St. Louis is a direct support.
But I don't know what helps.
And they raise lots of money through that organization.
It might be worth adding just one question to Melissa's expert and say, is there any chance? I mean, even if it required a statute, that probably wouldn't be that hard to make.
What's the value of being a DSO?
Well, I don't know. Could it be much less complicated, basically?
And would it rule out too many potential donors if we only go the DSO route? Or can you?
The whole reason we're doing this is to get the 501c3 status.
Yeah. Can you be a 501c3 and a DSO? Is there any benefit or any reason? Or
I guess I don't see anything off the top of my head. So, well, I'm confident that you've got this under control, but I think it's going to be a really complicated.
It will add some complexity. I mean, I had coffee this morning with our insurance agent. We started talking about what kind of insurance we need because we have a separate D&O policy.
Yeah.
We need to be named insureds on LCRDA's policy for certain things. And so,
well,
yeah.
You've got two audits. You've got two separate sets of books.
Not necessarily.
Well,
the
books, yes. The audit would depend. You don't have to have an audit, it depends on the revenue level, I believe. So yes, there's more work to be done. Right now, all I'm asking is, do we want to have a 501c3 and get money? If so, in which the board has already approved doing that, mm-hmm. and so we're executing on the previous board approval. The question is this articles of incorporation and bylaws sufficient, and who should be the initial directors?
Are you asking us to tell you that now?
I'm asking you to tell me. So.
Well, I've given you two names I would suggest as potential.
Here's what I'm asking for. Okay, let me make it more specific, and that's why I wanted to have this conversation. Are you okay with three initial directors who will then figure out how to constitute the board going forward?
I'm comfortable with that. How about the two of you, the three of you?
Do you have to come back to us and ask how and get approval for how you are then going to constitute the board?
No.
I think there, at least initially, there probably needs to be a little bit more contact than that.
That's the whole point. Once that thing gets constituted, it is its own entity. The only overlap right now is going to be me and whoever else you decide to put. One of the people that I talked about doing this, and what he said is when they filled out the board, they did a lot of the past board members mm-hmm. who were friendly to the board. Who understood what the mission was and understood the landscape, for example.
I don't know why the whole thing just makes me nervous, but it does. It does. Because it's like, yeah, they're gonna go off there and do that thing and, you know, it's gonna have our name on it. And now, granted, if you're there watching everything.
And I'm accountable to the board.
Same thing with Volunteer Florida and the Foundation for Florida. Well,
really?
They got into, you don't tell me what to do.
Right.
We don't report to you.
Right.
The board says, yes, you do report to us. We appoint you. This board would still appoint that board, would it?
No.
No, that's what he's saying. Once we strike the match and they take off, they're on their own.
Can I add a couple things?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because... first and foremost, I'm feeling like right now we need to workshop this at a board meeting as if we were the founding board of the nonprofit. And maybe that's what you're talking about with more discussion. If our board doesn't know how to say what the purpose is walking out of that, we got a problem. Because yes, it will be separate. I have less heartburn about creating the 501c and that function than it sounds like you all do. But if our board in a year, if half the board assumes that things were going to function differently or that we had some control or something, I'm not saying that. I think this kind of conversation needs to happen at the board meeting. That would be my first suggestion because there's obvious a lot of moving parts here. So Ron, I'm hoping we can do that, or maybe it's fleshed out a little bit more. The second thing I was going to say is I just went with it when I read it first about Ron, you being a member of the board. But what was occurring to me, and I thought about this example before, but it didn't lock in with the staffing of this and the administrative control of this until just now. Whether it be the Chamber and the Economic Development Council, in Florida Association of Counties, the FAC Foundation and the FAC Association, which is a C3 and a C4. The president of each of those organizations, Sue, Dick, Ginger, they run both organizations. They are the executive director for both organizations. That provides staffing continuity and an understanding of the whole picture of the organization. I think you being on the board and president of the board, that sounds fine to me in general, but as you were asking your questions and thinking about that, it may be better to start off, and this is just a gut feeling right now, so I haven't thought through it much, with a structure that says RED serves both of those roles. So it's very clear cut to our board, to the 501c3 board, that there is a connection, even if they're two independent boards. Now, staff time, other things like that, I mean, that may be the same. It may change in the future. I don't know how to flesh this out. But that was the first thought. And with that, I know FAC and others, I mean, we've been through a big, I'm on the foundation board. Nick is first VP of FAC board, sits on the foundation board. So there is that crossover like you were talking about before. I think that's important, like the TMH Foundation. One board member, a board member swap on both sides to keep that continuity. But the staff is employed by Florida Association of Counties. There may be something in the accounting, but they do run everything. So if we're not clear on that,
Basically, we'll be doing that as well. That's what I'm saying, that we were not going to have a separate staff.
Right. 501c. But what about, I mean, who's the ED of this 501c3? To me, that would be you.
It could be.
It should be.
Or it could be the incubator director.
Or staff, yeah.
It could be the incubator director.
It could be Michael.
Okay. So, but the Michael... See, this is exactly where I'm, as someone who wants this to happen, I think it is beneficial to us. Then you're board president and Michael is the ED. There's some weird things.
Why is that weird?
I feel like we need to have more information about this, like, you know, how are other similar situated organizations structured? You know, we're doing a lot because of the conflict of interest issue, but is the direct support organization, is that really the issue? And also, or is it because of the Sunshine Law that we're doing it? And, you know, to me, there's a lot of confusion around how this might work, and I feel like there must be good examples out there, and maybe somebody, we could have the attorney look at it for us and look at the pros and cons of various structures, because I think we do need to think of a worst case scenario if things got off the rails, not with our existing staff, but in 5 years or 10 years, FSU decides they want to take over it or some other weird thing happens. You know, how do we protect the organization? Or do we need to protect it? Or do we say, you know, if at some point it becomes its own entity, it just does?
Well, there'll be a level of control in that the staff will be provided by LCRDA and billed to the other organization. If there will be agreements between the two organizations that will govern those transactions, whether it's the leasing of employees, it could include the leasing of the facility. Because my guess is that the funding for the facility will come to LCRDA, particularly in the form of EDA grants and any other contributions that are not charitable. And then we'll turn around and lease that building back to the 501c3. So we'll have control of the facility in that regard. Any other sort of services that we provide to the 501c3 will be established by agreement. So the major purpose of the 501c3 board is fundraising.
Yeah.
And general oversight of that. And there could be additional boards that are created, advisory boards that go along with this, who will, you know, perhaps serve as the committee that helps determine admission into the incubator. There'll be lots of other structural things that are going to come up. We're just trying to get the ball rolling on an organization and that can accept charitable contributions in a process that takes a long time to get done.
I'm curious as to how much operational control is there versus operational control here. You talk about they raise the money, they can spend the money. I would want to make sure, though, and you talk about staff interlock. I understand that. But operational control, it looks like, can be totally, or should, supposed to be, according to the way we structure this, totally independent of this operation. Except that we're supposed to be thinking alike. They could make their own decisions on things that we wouldn't have input into, except through staff.
I mean, theoretically, the board of the 501c3 could fire the executive director.
I think you're getting to the thing just conceptually that bothers me. If the purpose for this is fundraising, I get it. We need a fundraising thing, and we need a place to put that money. But if the purpose of this is to run the incubator, that's what's giving me problems.
But how can the 501c3 collect the money and then give it to LCRDA?
Well, as a grant.
I don't know. So this goes back to what you initially said. 501c3 genius says we can't have education as our purpose. I think there is more we need to hear. I think we need to have a structured conversation about it. Because I feel like we're all over the place. And I don't want you to think that this is not something that I think is a good idea. I do think it's a good idea. But kind of like Dave, I feel like I have seen too many of these things that just turn out.
I'll put more meat on the bones and bring it back to you.
And get Melissa to, you know, to outline or have her guy outline. Okay,
she's not the business plan. She's the documents person, right?
And the other.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just tell you, in one email exchange, I told the guy that I'm not sure we have the right attorney working on this.
Well,
and so I made it very clear.
Then that really concerns me because you don't put something in a document, generally speaking, just so that you can satisfy the IRS and have it also be an operational document. It just doesn't work for
anybody. No, and that's not the problem. We're trying to get the language that matches up with what somebody else has done that also satisfies that when they apply to satisfy the IRS. So
no, I understand that, but the purpose of our thinking about this initially needs to be, what is this doing for us? Taking money. We want it to get a lot of money, but then we want to be able to have this thing which is going to succeed and, you know, go great guns and not create some future thing where you have conflict.
Okay, so I think you're right. There are a lot of questions, and we need to have a little more meat on the bone in order to exercise that. I wonder, they're in between directors right now, but any... Alice Lee Stansberry is the board chair right now. She helps facilitate tons for nonprofits. She may know more or know someone locally who could help us.
That's a good idea.
And that's a TCC affiliated program and who is a partner. And so I think Kim Warm, she runs that TCC center. They do have a separate board. So interesting enough, I mean, NE has their board, but how's that relationship with TCC? So they have some of the similar
issues. Yeah, so they're doing
issues.
The same thing.
For me, just to bring this, I have questions about the staffing because I see that as a buffer to some of the concerns. But I think that there are a lot of businesses that either invest in incubators or sponsorships that won't do it if it's not 501c3. Mm-hmm. So that's the conversation. The education piece, I agree with you. But I think this is why that conversation about the purpose is so critical, because my understanding, it could be, and correct me if I'm wrong, but to run this education program for Innovation Park, to manage that. I mean, there is always a tie back, maybe not run the, I don't know what it is, but there, it is always referencing for the benefit collective goals of Innovation Park.
Right.
So that's why the language,
so
that's why
you
talked about that,
right? You have almost a fiduciary concept.
Right, it's not,
that's what
you can do anything,
for.
But
right.
the policies, and that's I think where you're going, Ron, that those three initial board members, three, however many, setting the tone here, past board members, whatever it might be, it needs to be structured enough to hopefully get ahead of any of those conflicts, clear enough to say this is created for the benefit of.
And that was and that was my initial objective, was to put the people, the three people as the directors who could wade through all of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Before the first dollar is received, you know. I think there are such interconnection between what this 501c3 is going to do and what they're going to need from us. They're going to have to do the things that we need for them to do. They're not, I just don't see them running off and being the renegade and going and collecting a bunch of money and, you know, getting careless with the money. And I just don't see it. I think it's too interconnected, and maybe too much. I mean, that might be the challenge with the 501c3 application is that, you know, how much independence is there really of this organization? I think that
that's the key question.
I think the more interconnected they are, I think the harder it is to get that 501c3 approval. But I could be wrong. I'll go back and I'll revisit that.
Well, yeah, and I have stupid questions about. So we're not a nonprofit, as we're presently constituted.
I'm explaining. We can take tax deductible contributions, but we are not a 501c3. And there are organizations that can only contribute to 501c3s. It doesn't matter whether it's tax deductible or not.
Let's get down to the politics of it. Some of them don't donate to government.
Yes.
And we are perceived as government even though we don't take any tax dollars. That's
I get it.
That's the bottom line on it, is they have an internal policy. Maybe they've never thought through it because there aren't many government organizations that function like us without government funding. But there's policies out there across the board. I mean, broadly in different sized companies,
I just think this...
Does that help?
Yes.
I think there's enough complexity in this that I think it's going to be very hard for the board to work through all of this. Some of it we're going to have to figure it out as we go.
As a party of the whole,
And
that's a fair point.
And that's why I was thinking that if we got myself, a board member, and one other that were knowledgeable enough, we could work through these issues to make sure we construct the board in a way and allow for the types of agreements that we need between the two organizations that could maintain a distant yet effective control of that.
Well, and come back to the board with something that is clear enough but has enough meat on it that everybody kind of goes, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
So. Can we understand the cost? Sorry.
Excuse me, we understand the fundraising. That's easy to understand.
Right.
What troubles me is I don't understand the operational piece and control of this or not control, absence of control.
Is the concern the control over whatever money they collect and how they use it?
It's more concern is that they start running out here on left field trying to say, well, we need this or that, and we're thinking, golly, that's not where the board thinks our money and our future and our direction needs to be. And I've seen that with Volunteer Florida and the Volunteer Florida, whatever it was, I'm not sure if it was a foundation or what, but it totally got to where he even got the governor's office involved. He got so fouled up. Bob Milligan was in it, and he was saying that they're not following our directive, and they're saying we don't have to follow your directive. And
especially if they end up having a bunch of money. Now, that seems unlikely anytime in the near future.
And the governor's office was saying, we want to appoint this board. It's all going to be me. I'm going to appoint them all. I just want to know, and you said we can't have our appointment of board members to their organization. I don't know why we can't, but apparently there's a legal restriction that we can't.
The other thing I think we need to think about is the name of the organization, because it could become very confusing if the name, I believe that's what you said, Ron, that the name was essentially the Innovation Park.
Yeah, we had Innovation Park TLH, Inc., and that was not intended to be we assume there'll be a DBA at some point for whatever incubator actually gets created, but that seemed the most straightforward name to give it.
But April, I thought of that too, that and a DBA could solve it, but I think we may want to brand it differently.
Yeah, that's not.
Or not brand it, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That was not the intent. But we didn't want to, again, in the interest of trying to get this done quickly, we didn't want to spend a lot of time on the whole branding question to create the legal entity.
Right.
And again, the hard part here is that it just takes so darn long to get the 501c3 application approved. So we're trying, that's part of the interest in trying to move quickly on this. And I understand the hesitance on the structural question. But yes, if you create a 501c3, you do give up board control. But the question is, can you put other controls in place through the agreements that you have between the organizations? Because they will be a dependent organization. They are going to depend on us for the facility, for the staffing. So if they wanted to go and run off in some other direction, you know, you could have clauses that could cancel the staffing arrangement. You could have clauses that would accelerate, you know, payments due on a lease, or I don't know. There could be penalty clauses.
Well, they've got a bunch of the money.
But
LCREA will have the building. So what are they going to do with their money without the building?
Yeah, and this is, it gets even deeper than that. As Ron said before, EDA grant that would have all kinds of time limits on the facility and everything else to use for that purpose. That's all on the Innovation Park board side. So we would not only hold the building, but we would be in agreement on those things and be monitoring the execution of those agreements through the 501c3. So there's all kinds of layers. That's the other agreements you're talking about. Trying to bring this in for landing, I know, but my two big questions before submitting, if the board were approved, the application, because this is a 6 month plus process to get a application approved. I, for one, am convinced that it is necessary and a good thing to do the incubator. So doing that application process parallel with whatever we work on, with whatever Michael's working on with the incubator, is a good thing. That's the purpose, and that's the officers, to me. Those were my questions. It gets into all of these other things.
And directors.
Then, right, I'm sorry, the initial directors, that's what I meant.
But actually it's both, but yeah.
Okay.
Purpose, officers, directors.
Yeah. So if those two questions, if the board is not comfortable submitting the application without fleshing out more than those two questions, I would say that initial three-person group or something, work on it before the August board meeting and come back with a better plan. If we could get some clarity on those two things that made people comfortable with at least submitting the application, we could workshop those details while the application is in process. Is that right? Am I thinking about this right?
Yes. So there are two different things. There's the organization, and then there's the application. The organization has to exist before we can do the application.
Okay. And that's the bylaws. That's those types of things, because you have to submit it with your app.
Yes, and you have to have an EIN. So it's the articles of incorporation and bylaws exist before the 501c3 application.
Let me limit further conversation on this topic to 3 more minutes, so we can proceed. But I want to have everybody have an opportunity to talk. April, do you have anything more you'd like to add to this conversation? Hello, April.
April, can you hear us? Take us off mute.
And can you add anything more?
I think we need a motion that really tells us what we're going to try to do here today. And nobody's made a motion yet, have they?
No,
have not. You prepared to make one?
It's really just direction is what I'm looking for at this point.
While you're giving that some thought, Kristen, you have further comment, closing comment on the subject.
No, that was what I was trying to do, Dave, is see if we could distill what we need to know now, or if we're not going to be comfortable moving forward with this until we answer more of those questions.
Well, and has the full board ever given approval to form Innovation Park TLH?
They gave approval mm-hmm. to form a 501c3.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's been done. So all we're, and that was done quite some time ago. So all we're doing is trying to direct you as to how to carry that out.
Right.
Okay. Sorry, Chris.
No, that's
and to, I think, confirm that that's the right track we should proceed. And I haven't heard anybody say yet that they are not interested in pursuing that. I'm only hearing persons saying, and I think you said we need more meat on the bone, one of you said that.
I did.
And I think that's where we are right now. I don't hear any negative but I hear question marks out there floating about how's this really going to work.
Well, what I propose is that I go back and I lay out the initial board as I think it ought to be. I illustrate it graphically. I investigate ways of allowing the LCRDA board to at least have input on the constitution of a new board for this organization, whether it's a nominating process or something to that effect.
Come up with an example, a Florida example, if possible.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but we'll figure out how to do that. But what I hear you saying is you're very concerned about the level of independence of this organization, of the new organization, and what they might be able to do given enough money and time. And what damage.
Well, I think we're talking about year one is concerning. It's year 3, 5, or 7 that might be concerning.
Well, and so maybe a subsidiary question to that is, if something is going wrong with the 501c3, can we do anything about it? In other words, year 2 or 3, could we go, we don't like the way you're doing this, we're going to change you all up here?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think that's what Ron was saying about we hold the money for staffing, we hold the staff. All the staff is employed by Innovation Park, other things. The board could exist, but if it's not, if its purpose, meaning the benefit of Innovation Park, no longer wants it to be there,
but they
can't
have
execute the bylaws
and
that on file.
And the example, unfortunately, the local example, EDC.
Is the EDC.
Well, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I got that in my brain.
I have another example. I worked with an association that created a direct support organization, and they sold workers' comp insurance, and the proceeds all went to the association. Any profit. Well, over time, the board composition changed, and the control of the organization shifted. And so all of a sudden, the association that had created it no longer had control of the organization, even though it was called the association's name as a direct support organization. And they had to go and beg for crumbs from the CSO.
Well, that's the worst case.
Yes.
Well, that's kind of where I am in the case of the Volunteer Florida Foundation. They decided, okay, we're just going to hire our own staff. And they did. They had an executive director and a couple of other staff members and just decided we're going our own direction.
Well, let me see if I can articulate my subsidiary question. If this board can, under some circumstance, go back and do something to the creation documents for the 501c3, once it exists.
I don't think so, no.
Then I'd feel better about it, but I think you're right.
No, I think once you create this organization, it is a standalone organization.
And then you're back to the practical things that Kristen just talked about.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you could do this, but there wouldn't be any there.
Yeah. All right, our direction.
And worst case, we have an incubator that is incredibly successful, raising all kinds of money, and they're located in Innovation Park, and they're running themselves, and LCRDA has absolutely no control over them. Oh, no.
And this is, to me, that's a, yeah. It's going to take a hell of a lot to run an incubator.
Yep.
We're already maxed out in the board work and the work of our staff and other things like that. So when we first started talking about this, it was, how do you run and have oversight over an incubator?
Right.
Is that in Innovation Park's mission to actually run that program, or are we just enabling that program, something like that? So there is...
Yeah.
There's another side to that, that
right.
It may benefit us to have
somebody. That's the objective.
Right. Mm-hmm. But to me, that is where the staffing question and the limited scope, it is almost a Friends of Innovation Park scope, comes into play there and making it so you barely have anything to do but for what we like you and have you do. But I do. I'm going to go look at a couple of examples, Ron. I would love to talk to you about your role in this, because I think it could be critical to have staff and someone shared on the board both.
Yep.
But the last thing I want to say here is, do I need to double check, or do we know say we move forward with this and this board is created in 6 months and we want to have a board member swap. I'm just hypothetically. Let me say before September of 19 or September of 20. We would have to change the county ordinance to add a board seat on Innovation Park board for someone from the 501c3 board. Just putting it out there, it's way premature, but if we wanted that board swap, I do think it's going to have to change that ordinance.
Couldn't they just take one of the private sector?
Or they could take one of the private sector.
You're saying if they mandate it. I mean, if you want to mandate that relationship through ordinance, yes.
If we wanted to say one of the designated seats, yes. So there's still 6 seats that the county commission appoints, they could choose a member of the 501c3 or not.
Yeah. Or you could change one of the 6 to be a 501c3.
Or that, or go to 13 yeah. if we're at a place like, and have one mandated seat for the board chair of the 501c3. Long-term thinking, but at some point that question's going to come up.
And the county who now appoints our board, is there any issue that they would say, well, we also get to appoint this other board?
No.
No.
It gets us out of, not out of, it frees us in some ways. On sunshine issues, on county commission issues, government entity issues. I mean, there. It needs to be tied to Innovation Park very tightly.
Well,
but it also helps.
I will tell you this.
That's my sense.
County staff at one point in a meeting, were you in that meeting? I think you might have been. I'm not sure. Yeah, you were there. We were talking to Alan.
Yes.
And Alan asked the question, kind of off the wall, and I wasn't prepared for the question. I never saw it coming. And that his question was, have you guys ever considered any other form of organization?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yes, I did.
And I should have drilled down a little bit on that one, but we were there for something else. And
oh, yeah, that was like, don't
get
us
out of left field.
Yeah.
Like, no. So, anyway, I just thought that was it was just an interesting enough question to make me think, well, what else would we be? So,
and are there advantages of being something?
Nothing ever came of that question, yeah. But it was just interesting that it was asked.
All right, I'm going to call time on this one simply because we're running out of time and ask the executive director if he feels he is adequately, prepared to understand what we are asking and proceed with coming back to the board.
There's a lot of stuff thrown out there. I understand the general dilemma that you guys all faced with, and I will try to lay it out in such a way to answer the kinds of questions that we've heard, and Peggy will give me a complete list of
She's been over there. She's got it down.
We at this point in taking no formal action other than to give you direction.
Okay.
And we proceed there. Next is discussion on Collins Building renovation and the RFQ.
Okay, so we pulled the RFQ from the agenda because it's just not ready yet. I've got about 80% of the RFQ done. It's not like we haven't done anything. It's just I've got to get some specs.
So we're going to pull this one completely.
Yes, but I do want to discuss kind of the status of where Collins is at.
Okay.
We are working with a prospect under a confidentiality agreement called Project Sunshine. And when I call the person Sunshine, he wants to hit me, but you know, whatever. So, I'm trying to, I'm tap dancing on how much I can talk about. They are not in a position to commit yet. They are working on some things that preclude them from committing. When they work through these things, then they fully expect that they will want to take 8,000 square feet, which is pretty good.
And with the lab or
including about 1,600 square feet of the lab. If they don't, if the things that they are trying to do don't materialize, they still want the 1,600 square feet in the lab. So that one of the advantages of working with these folks is they want minimal renovation. Okay, we're talking ceilings, floors, and walls. Okay, a few partitions removed to enlarge certain rooms, maybe a new partition here or there, but no major renovations, including the lab. If anything, they do want us to remove the hoods. Because they're not functional. I mean, they won't pass code. And he says we could use the space, and they have some of their own hoods, different kinds of hoods. But
At this point, you will be prepared to give us, hopefully, maybe a briefing on this at the board meeting.
Yes, I can do that. I'll have an update for that. And then one other issue that's come up in the discussions is the negotiation of the rate. Okay, we had talked in the past about possibly having a higher rate in the lab. I think Sid Martin was $28 a foot. In the presentation that I did on the budget, I had talked about the potential revenue for the Collins Building. In that number, I included the $1,660 a square foot, which is what we give for office space, anticipating that there would be minimal services provided and minimal rent renovations. And I have discussed that because the person I'm talking to has heartburn over $28 a foot. When you look at the condition of the lab and the kinds of things that are there, he actually wants to remove even more stuff, and I'm going to convince him that for a short-term lease, we're not going to do a lot of taking it out. But unless it's absolutely in the way of what he's trying to accomplish, we're going to leave stuff in. If we got to put the drops up in the ceiling or something, we'll do that, but we're not going to physically remove.
What's your recommendation on the rate?
My recommendation is that we offer the $1,660 rate across the board. As long as he sticks to that minimal support that is needed. They're not doing heavy lab, you know, it's not biomedical necessarily in terms of, you know, drug development or requiring clean room or anything like that that they need. They'll bring in and do their own, sort of like what you saw, a general capacitor. You were there, you didn't go there.
That's the grand opening. Yeah.
So basically, if they have to have any of those kinds of facilities, they'll build it inside the room, wherever they need it.
I'm taking a page out of Ann's book, don't I?
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Too much study.
Okay. So yeah, my recommendation is that we make that offer at $1,660 a foot, especially if we can get 8,000 square feet.
Yeah. I'll move it.
There's a move. There's a second.
Second.
Any further discussion? Motion is at $1,660 square foot. Continued discussion with the prospect. Those in favor signify by say aye.
Aye.
Opposed by like sign.
April's back.
Motion carries. Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
And I apologize, but I have to step out. I have to be at this conference that I came down here for.
We understand. I can't share any other details, but I have another prospect for a few thousand square feet, perhaps.
Yeah.
And I asked them to call you before the June 7th meeting, board meeting, in case there was any other things. But, yeah, so just...
Primarily office space or lab
mix.
Space?
Okay. Okay. Not lab.
Not lab.
Not lab.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah.
Right. Happy to talk to them.
Manufacturing space? Maybe.
No.
Mostly administrative space, then.
Admin and workbenches.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Good. Thank
Cobblers.
You.
Cobblers. It's a new cobbler shop.
It is.
April, before you get off, are you there?
No.
Okay. Thanks. Goodbye.
All right, let me, I'm glad that both of our former chairs are here right now. Next item I want to talk about a little bit is, what is the proper term of this office? And I'm not advocating that the chair be anything different than it is, except that I am wanting some discussion about it. I looked at the list and...
This is fascinating. Yeah.
If you look back maybe 35 years or so of this organization, chair has only twice served 1 year terms.
Well, just so you know, that list is not by term, correct?
It's by year.
Those are
right.
Calendar years.
Right.
Because she could not identify necessarily what the term was because she went back and looked at.
Okay, calendar years. I'll go either way.
Right.
It's been multiple years.
But not necessarily terms, not multiple terms necessarily.
There's one that came out and then went back in. I think the rest
Ray.
Of them served Ray Eaton.
Yeah.
The rest of them served multiple years. The two of you
and
served.
And what do our bylaws say? They just say
the officers are elected each year.
Each year.
Yeah.
But you can serve two terms. We change that, or
you serve three. So
yeah, it says well, it says two,
board.
But the board can always override the bylaws. So by vote. So.
Well, my point is. Does 1 year give whoever the chair is, and I'm certainly not looking for another year job, and if it necessary to say we won't do this, we can start it next year, whoever the chair is. But I know at EDC, it took a little while to ramp up before you felt like you were the chair. You were the chair. Mm-hmm. You were the chair. I'd really like to drill down a little bit and ask you, is the one-year appointment the proper time? Should we think in terms of two-year appointments, as some organizations have done in the community, or leave it alone? I'm not advocating one way or the other. I do feel, I will say, I lean a little bit toward, is 1 year enough? And I don't know what Ron's thoughts are, but I will say this also. I know he's had a lot of trouble in the past years of saying, well, who are we going to put in the chairs next yeah. time around? Are we going to be able to fill the officer positions when we need to? This would help a little bit on that. But I'm just throwing it out on the floor to get a comment. And I'll start with you since you were our most recent former chair.
Well, conceptually, I agree with you completely. You know, if you're actually new to the position, you need a year to figure it out and then another year to, you know, kind of consolidate anything that was what you wanted to do or ideas you had or whatever. But having served on a number of different boards and been in this position a number of different times, the problems with finding people have generally overwhelmed the structure. You know, it's like, okay, that's great, but this guy just decided he doesn't want to do a second year, he's out of there. But the idea, I think, of a two-year term, and then you know in the second year who the chair-elect is, and you're working with them, and then it goes to the chair-elect in that third year.
And we haven't had a chair-elect, we've had just a vice chair.
Right. But and maybe that's kind of the same thing.
The assumption.
There's an assumption there.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think generally 2 years makes a whole lot more sense.
Kristen, you served 3 years. What are your thoughts?
Nobody else wanted the job.
Nobody else wanted it
yeah.
that time. I think, in addition to what you all said, certainly agree. 2 years getting your feet under you, it can happen that way typically, but yes, there's a perennial problem of everything you said, Ann. But then we have two, I can think of a couple of additional issues that we have, which are unique. If we lean towards private sector officers, we only have six, mm-hmm. and your terms are only 2 years. So you get four years, thank you. But people rotate every 2 years. That's what I was thinking. So if you have a chair elect, I'm going to come back to that in a second, whose term is elected chair elect when they only have 2 years left in their term, chances are good the county commission is going to reappoint them. But that's a little bit of an odd scenario that you have someone teed up when they're seeking reappointment. That may never be an issue, but you do have that marker every four years, but every 2 years for someone to say, something came up, I'm leaving, and there's reappointments, things like that. I just add that because we do have a limited number of people. I do think having a commitment for 2 years is different than doing it because, and that may be more challenging to get people to commit for 2 years, but they're already committed to the board, or to be ready to be chair, but it does help frame things a little better versus we get to the end and no one else wants to run and see your chair again. The last thing I'll say is not related to this, so I don't know if I've helped at all. I think it is more complicated for us with the number of private sector board members we have, others. We could start looking at the public sector seats if we want. For reasons that might have been illuminated this year, I think having a chair elect might be very interesting. To indicate that you need some experience on the executive committee before becoming chair. Hmm. I think anybody becoming chair does that job better if they have served as an officer previously. And chair-elect may be a way to formalize that commitment to be chair and to get some training. So I don't know if that's a middle ground for you, Dave. It could still let a chair serve for 2 years, but you kind of have backup.
Well, again, this is not something I'm standing up here and saying I want this done. This is something I'm trying to think of what works best for the organization, what works best for the person who is the chair, what works best for the person who we think is coming in as the vice chair or the chair-elect, what works best for rotation, the four-year appointment thing. I've, in the 8 or 9 or whatever number of years you and I have been here, we've never seen the county not re-elect a person who wanted to remain on the board.
Yeah, that's true.
That.
Yeah,
they could do that. So let's take the example of Kim Williams. If Kim wanted to become the chair-elect, and it were 2 year terms, we would expect that he'd have to serve another 4 year term.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I think on that point, we've shored up the county nominating process by putting the chair on that, or, you know,
someone.
On that committee.
Yeah.
So you're right. I'm not really fearful of that. It's a little different than other nonprofits.
I wonder if we could have, instead of a bylaw requirement, if we just had some sort of statement about this is the structure that we prefer, recognizing that it may not always be possible. And yes, you're right. You can always override it by the board anyway. But a statement just of we'd like for the chair to serve two terms. We'd like for that person to have previous executive committee experience. We would like for the vice president to be the chair-elect and to begin shadowing, or whatever you want to call it, in year two of the boards, blah, blah, blah. I think that might, you know, at least guide us, because I'm a little hesitant to put too much more in stone, because I think our much bigger problem is going to be to continue to get people who are able to do this to the level that, you know, it's not that many meetings, and we still have people have a hard time getting people to come here and to really understand what they're doing and participate. And I actually worry about that in terms of these new missions that are being taken on, and, you know, it's becoming a real deal, you know, and great progress has been made, which should attract more people, you know.
I did have one prospect.
Good. Yeah. But that doesn't always mean that the people you attract are going to be in there and actually doing what needs to be done and attending the meetings, and it's hard.
We've been surprised with some of our picks. Some positive, some negative.
Yeah. You can't ever tell. And people's life, their lives change, and they, you know, different things happen.
Has anyone who ever wanted to be chair of second year not been voted chair? I mean, is this... I understand the desire, and maybe that you solve it with what you've proposed, but in most organizations, when a chair says, hey, I'd like to be chair again for a second year, they pretty much always get elected. But on the other hand, if you got a bad chair, when you want the opportunity to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's obviously a thing, but I know, particularly with Kristen, she came in with some ideas that she needed time to lay out. She did a very good job of formalizing some of those things, but they didn't happen in 12 months. Would they have continued? Yes, they did. You had some great ideas too, but I think if you'd only been there 1 year, some of those might not have survived. You certainly had a better feel for what you needed to do after year one, or if you were there for 2 years.
Sure. And I also think that having somebody serve 5 or 6 terms as chair, if that's what happens and they're a great leader, and everything is going gangbusters, is not the end of the world. You know?
I served 5 1-year terms at Mission St. Louis and rewrote the bylaws that couldn't be done again.
I just
thought that was just not
proper.
I thought change of administration is good.
It is, but the thing that just really has impressed me as I've tried to do this stuff is you get these really good people. You and I are mostly retired, you know? I mean, I'm working half-time. People who have full-time jobs, full-time commitments, it's like, this is not at the top of their list. So maybe we just need more retirement.
You talked about exposure to the board. At one time, we had the monthly meetings. I was 100% in favor of going to every other month.
Yeah.
But that cut one half of the amount of exposure our board members had.
Yeah, and then if you don't make a meeting, you've really missed something.
Training and mentoring and so on.
Well, we cut half of the workload, too, because we weren't nitpicking everything.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, here, I see this as incremental change. I mean, one thing about this list is that everything prior to 2011 was dramatically different about this organization.
Absolutely.
Completely.
Yeah.
The level of work, the types of things that we're doing, just unbelievably different. I see my 3 years as restructuring 3 years. And like being retired, my job is to be on boards I'm appointed to and work for the county,
yes.
And I
yes.
make this my full-time job.
Right.
So I was in a unique position to be able to spend more time. I think this is the best, most sustainable organizations, and I have looked at TMH a lot over the years as I thought through this board as we did, is an organization that both educates their members so they're and vets them pretty heavily. I mean, TMH has a heavy vetting process and discussion before you get on that board. I mean, you've got to be all in 1,000%. I don't know if we're there yet, but a sustainable organization is one that can flow through different officers. So I am more in the, it starts to be one person's organization or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, 2-3 years, that's not as problematic, 2 years. But in the stepping stone, I would say going to, and I think this is a bylaw change, a chair-elect gets us closer to a structure where we have two people who are really committing to being the chair and the chair-elect the next 2 years, and then obviously past chair on executive committee.
Yeah.
That continuity right there and that education could help a lot. And then, yeah, a chair could be, if there's no new chair-elect, that chair could be elected for a second year, and the chair-elect could be elected for a second year.
So the chair-elect wouldn't necessarily mean you're going to be the chair next year. It's just when the chair, current chair leaves, then you're the chair.
That, I mean,
that's a loose issue. That's kind of loose, though. Loosey-goosey.
I think
maybe
it would
you're
be,
next year, maybe you're not.
Yeah, I think it would be your chair the following year, but for extraordinary circumstances.
Yeah.
That the board is working at or something.
Are you saying then it's you stay 1 year on the chair?
No, the chair is 2 years.
So if you go 2 years on the chair and the chair elect is 2 years, okay, then the chair elect either has to have another term or they have to be chair elect at the beginning of their first term. At the start of the term, because in order
problem.
To be there for 4 years, and this is what this is all about. Okay.
Yep, you're right.
Now,
I forgot about
even
that.
Yeah.
Even if
that's
and here's the other part: if you have a chair elect, if you say, okay, well, that's not really an issue because they can get reappointed. Well, then you've got to convince a chair elect that they're going to serve more than 4 years.
Yep.
And they may not want to commit to that.
This is, thank you, Ron, much better way of saying what I was saying. I see this as stepping stones. If we were going to go to a 2-year term, I think we got to look at the number of board members, we got to look at other factors, things like that. I was actually saying chair-elect in a 1-year term for now.
Oh, okay.
But for extraordinary circumstances. So the board could agree to allow both of those people to serve a second year in those roles if there's not someone else in the pipeline. I don't know how that looks. I'm just looking for the flexibility that you two mentioned. But my gut on this is for that four-year term and for the limited number of board members and for the sustainability of the organization, my gut would be chair-elect and chair 1 year each would be the goal.
I'm looking at a Kim Williams. I'm thinking that Kim Williams coming in here will have a lot of really good ideas, and he's going to really want to start things rolling and move the ball. And I'm not sure if Kim Williams can get the things he wants done in 1 year. Now you say, well, okay, we'll just elect him another year. But then what does that do with a person who is chair-elect, who thought they were going to be in the position next year, but now they're not? And does their term expire and so on and so forth? So I'm really trying to think of, and certainly Kim Williams didn't put me up to this, and he may shoot me down or hurt. I don't want to, as he might say. But I'm thinking that Kim Williams will have a lot to offer this organization. And to just have him in 1 year, to me, seems like we short-sighted the organization.
But if he does all of those things, isn't he going to get elected to the second year?
But if he does, what does that happen to the chair-elect?
What does it matter if he's chair?
Well, let me say this.
Yeah. I don't want to be a part of an organization that changes direction 180 degrees based on the chair's whims. We've seen organizations that, and I'm not saying we ever have that or anything like that.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is that's what was implied by you need 2 years to implement your vision. My thinking is if we are a cohesive organization, a board member, a chair-elect, or a chair should be able to get those ideas in there. And a chair-elect strengthens...
I hear you. But we couldn't get the 501c3 in 1 year. We got
but
it rolling.
But that's not because of the chair.
Yeah, I hear you. We got it rolling.
I think the four-year term is more problematic for this and our limited number and everything like that. I hear what you're saying.
I don't think the four-year thing is a problem because it could be, but it has never been. And so you say no one has ever wanted to have another four-year term but didn't get it.
Do we want to continue this conversation for the board meeting?
Well, that's kind of where I'm just about ready to go.
Okay.
Is this something that should be elevated to discussion on the board? Or are you convinced just leave it alone? Or where are we on this subject? I look to your input because both of you have been there at former chairs and both served. Thinking you were serving 1 year and ended up serving two, would you have been better off serving two to start with and say two is enough, no more? Or, you know, I don't know what the process is. I do think it needs discussion, and I'm willing to put it on the board agenda next time if you are comfortable with that and prepared to weigh in on it.
If we have room on our agenda, if we're not, covered up with stuff otherwise, but I'm all in favor of having a discussion. I probably think, I'd want to hear everything. I probably think we're not going to get very far talking about it in terms of changing things, because I think what it's going to come down to is,
do we just leave it alone?
What happens, and who you convince to be on the board, and who I convince to be on the board, and who really has a feel for it, and
well, as I said, we...
And I am sorry, I've got to go.
Well, I won't have any more comments. That's for me. Do you have anything that's really binding?
Just real quick, I did an interview. Michael and I did an interview with Tom Flanagan. He is going to break it up into several. He said, I got so much material, I can do several little features on that. We're also working on trying to do one of his perspective shows on entrepreneurship. The trail meeting early next week to go through, to actually walk, and they've got a bid back for the engineering piece. It's pretty close to budget. Painter Magnetics, we did a little lab lease for. He got an SBIR grant, and then the paperwork didn't go through, and now he has to cancel his lease. It was just a little lab in Morgan Building. The prospect for the board is Bill Holloman. He is interested in joining the board. So I had a nice conversation. He's an attorney.
He's worked with the EEP program for years.
Yeah, he's volunteered with the EEP
and he works with FSU too sometimes at the law school.
So.
And then, last but not least, I won the Junior Achievement Raffle to go to Galway, Ireland, so.
Nice!
I won it.
Damn, yeah. Ron!
Was that by drawing, or was that just you bid $10,000?
You don't have to put that in the recording.
$100 raffle tickets, and I bought one for myself and for Denise and Peggy. This is before I get, that was their Christmas presents.
And you told each one which we had, one was yours?
We had Thomas Hall Ferguson do the certified drawing. So I was stunned because I'm like, oh no, this is really not that good.
So when are you going? When do you want to go?
We're working on that. I had just booked a vacation to San Antonio, so so we already had airline tickets and all that. Wow. So probably next year. Probably.
Is there any further business to come before the organization? Hearing none, we are adjourned.